Hello and welcome to another episode of the Auto Chat podcast. I'm Alistair Charlton, an automotive and technology journalist, and I'm joined as ever by my friend and fellow car enthusiast, George Turner.
Hello.
Hey, George. Been a couple of weeks. How are you doing? What have you been up to?
Well, I've been very busy, to be honest. Now I've kind of picked up a few bits of work, not doing the job that I normally do, just doing extra bits and bobs, bit of gardening, bit of just general groundsmanship, whatever the word is.
Yeah, you're a self-made man now, aren't you? You're an entrepreneur.
Yes. I'm in the grey economy a bit, but yeah, no, I'm just, you know, helping people out and doing whatever jobs come my way. So, long story short, I'm busy.
Good.
And I can keep doing this now until June the 23rd, apparently.
Yeah, the travel industry has sort of been put on hold a little bit, hasn't it? Or is decided, or at least your employer has decided to sort of sit out for a little bit.
Yes.
Until the government sort of works out what's going on.
Yeah. I think they just don't want to keep messing their customers around and just sort of said, right, well, if it's anything before the 23rd of June, we'll give you your money back and move on or rebook you or whatever. So how are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yeah, not too bad. Been busy as usual. Had a couple of cars in last couple of weeks and they've been good. Yeah, I guess I'll just jump straight into that because I've got not much else to say. I mean, I bought the MX-5 the other week and I haven't really used it yet. So,
well, you sort of seem to have a steady string of press cars at the minute, so.
Yeah, it's been that way. I felt a bit sorry for the MX-5 because a few days after it turned up, an Aston Martin Vantage Roadster also turned up. So when I've got the choice of which two-seat convertible sports car to pick, that's going to be the Aston, isn't it? So yeah, I had that. I felt a bit jammy with that because they said, oh, we've got loads of availability through April and May. What weekend do you want? I said, well, Easter weekend, because then I get it for 5 days. And they're like, yeah, sure, no problem.
That's experience yeah. Talking there, isn't it?
Always go for a bank holiday weekend. If there's one coming up, always, because the press garage is closed.
There you go.
So yeah, that was great. Yeah, I had it from Thursday till Tuesday, and the weather sort of played ball, and yeah, went for a good drive out into the Cotswolds on the Friday. I was out all day, just sort of driving around. It was great. And yeah, it was good fun. Saw a few friends.
Yeah, it looked lovely.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I mean, it's a hell of a car. And just the name, I think. Like, we're in an age now where so many cars have got loads of numbers in their names. They don't mean an awful lot. Aston Martin Vantage Roadster. I mean, it just says it all, doesn't it? It's just a brilliant name. And I think it looks great. The noise it makes is just extraordinary. I don't know how they got away with that.
It's got a 4-litre V8, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. It's 4-litre twin-turbo V8. Obviously front engine, rear wheel drive, 2-seat convertible, and it had the automatic 8-speed with the paddles. I think there will be a manual coming. I think you can get a manual of the coupe, so I think there will be a manual of the Roadster at some point. But yeah,
that would be one hell of a drive.
It's brilliant. Yeah, it's about 500 horsepower, you know, 60 miles an hour in 3.5, something like that. But it's just the noise. The soundtrack is bloody brilliant. You know, so many cars now are being muted a bit with all these filters and whatnot. Even companies like Ferrari, they're struggling to get around the various sort of emissions filters that are on cars now. But this Aston, it was just...
It's nice. It's like when you're on the last day of your holiday and you're just trying to do everything and hold on to that last bit of sun. I feel like that's how this is with cars that have not got some sort of hybrid or electric or... You know, like you say, just general toning down of the noise or the general experience. Just a proper old school combustion engine car.
I agree. As soon as I got into it, I thought, this is a bit of an old car. I mean, it's brand new, absolutely brand new car. But you get in and think, it's a little bit old in here. You've got loads of buttons. The display isn't touch sensitive. This particular one didn't have CarPlay. And the system is from a Mercedes, but it's sort of a generation old. And so it at first I thought, oh, okay. It doesn't feel like a new car, but then you just don't care. And like you said, it feels like it's just a last hurrah and all the better for it. You get used to not having the newest tech. And yeah, it was just brilliant. Loved it. I was sat in traffic coming back. I'd been down to Epsom. I was coming back towards London, sat in traffic. There was a guy next to me in a Mini Cooper S. We were stationary, and he gave it a little rev, and the exhaust on that, you know, it does the pop, pop, pop thing. And I looked across at him, and he was grinning, and I sort of smiled back at him and grinned. And I thought, right, I'll just do the same. I gave it a little blip, and he just absolutely like, wet himself laughing. I think he didn't expect it to be quite as vocal as it was. And I had it in track mode, admittedly, but just the noise it makes, it really... Yeah, it's loud. And you get a sort of a real sort of shotgun sound almost from it, from the exhaust, when it ignites a bit of fuel. And yeah, it's properly antisocial.
That's awesome.
But you can turn it down.
Can you turn it down?
Yeah. So standard mode is sport. You turn it on, it's in sport. And yeah, the stop start is on. So when you're in traffic, it kills the engine when you're not moving. And it's fairly quiet. But yeah, when you put it in sport plus or track, it's a hooligan. And yeah, really enjoyed it.
And they're about 130 odd grand, aren't they?
Yeah, something like that. It was a bit less than I thought, actually. I kept telling people it was 140. I think the Roadster starts about 120. And I know when they put the Roadster out, they cut the price of the coupe a little bit. Because admittedly, they're not selling very well. The hardtop Vantage, by all accounts, hasn't sold well at all. I think if you buy one, you lose 30 grand immediately. And they seem to have settled at sort of 85, 90, 95. So I hope they do well. I hope they do sell, because it's a great car. Absolutely loved it.
Have you had anything else?
Yes, I have. Less interesting was the Cupra Formentor, and I just can't quite get around that name. It doesn't sound right. Formentor sounds like some kind of, I don't know, cleaning product or something off Robot Wars.
A fermentor is a container in which fermentation takes place.
I mean, it's not what
Which
you
isn't
want,
a good
really.
Way. It's not. You don't want to be inside a container where you're likely to ferment.
No.
And so this is So Cupra are Seat, but they're Seat sporty cars.
It's like what Toyota does when it wants to sell a car that it can't put a Toyota badge on because it's too expensive. So they put a Lexus badge on instead. And yeah, so this is what Seat has done. Cupra's always been around as sort of the sporty trim level. It used to be their GTI, didn't it?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's what that is. But it's you're driving around in a car that's really quite distinctive, especially in the matte paints that the press cars are in, which gets dirty really easily. It turned up filthy. So people are looking, but they look at the badge and they're like, what the hell is that? I've got no idea.
In a way, I think people look at it, and if they don't know, they think, is this some sort of cheap Chinese imitation car? You know what I mean? When you see a new-looking car with a badge you've never seen, and you kind of wonder, is this some sort of cheap, weird brand? I don't know. Making a new car brand like that is quite a big step. And I think Seat had a fairly good... Like, their sporty cars were quite well received and quite well known, you know, like the old Cupra and the Leon. And did we need a whole new brand for it?
I'm not sure if we did, because I mean I don't think this sold in very big numbers, but that almost made it more interesting. That if you saw a Cupra, like say a Cupra Leon, you go, oh, that's one of those hot Seats, and they were in the touring cars for a while, I think, were they?
Well, they are returning. I think Cupra are one of the teams this year is going to run a set of Cupras. I'm not quite sure which model, but...
And it's... So I don't know if you can hear the banging in the background. Upstairs are doing some DIY or something, which is quite annoying.
That's fine. I mean, because it's lighter now, it's dark now, but when I was sitting here just before we started, it was light. And do you know outside my house, we've got that traffic calming thing, which is just like a cobbled area.
Yeah.
So what the kids do is they ride their bikes over it.
Yeah.
And because it makes them go... So when you're sitting there, and I was so it's about an hour ago I was sitting here and all I could hear was but luckily it's got dark and they've had to go to bed, so
yeah, if you do hear any banging, anyway, that's the neighbours, and if you hear any strange laughing, that's Rupert upstairs with his Jimmy Carr seal laugh. Anyway, so I don't know, with the Cupra, it's a perfectly decent car. It's sort of a Golf R on stilts with a new body, I suppose.
Just like a little coupe SUV type thing.
Yeah, like every car is these days.
Yeah, sort of a bit higher and trying to be sporty.
Yeah, up on tippy toes. And it's a quick thing. It's 300 horsepower, all-wheel drive, 60 in 5 seconds. It moves. It's plenty quick enough. It's probably all the car you ever need in a lot of ways. It's big enough and it's practical enough and you can park it fine and it's pretty quick. But it just didn't do anything for me at all. I wish them all the
and
best.
You'd have to constantly be explaining.
But yeah, there's that.
You have to be constantly explaining to people, it's a Cupra. What's that? Well, it's...
Yeah, do you know Seat? Well, vaguely. Yeah, it's difficult. So, I don't know. Same. I'm not quite sold on that. And also, it has the most artificial of the artificial exhaust sounds I've ever heard. So many manufacturers now put a bit of sound through the speakers to make the car sound better than it is because of the lack of exhaust note from most cars these days. Mostly it's fine and it's not too obvious. With this, as soon as I turned it on, it sounded like a muscle car. It sounded like a V8. And I just laughed. I sat there like, what? What is this?
And they just ripped it from a PlayStation 1 game.
It feels that way, yeah. It feels like they've gone behind a Mustang with a microphone. So I thought to myself, like, is it actually making that noise? Like, surely not. And, you leaned my head out the window and revved it, and no, it's not making that noise at all. And it's fine when you're up and driving and you've sort of got it in the sportier mode and I can forgive it, but when you just sort of, getting out of a parking space and it sounds like a Mustang... It's just a bit silly.
It doesn't impress, it doesn't impress anyone, does it?
No.
I mean,
no.
Maybe it makes you feel good.
Oh, I don't know. It just stood out immediately. I was like, what is that? It just didn't fit at all. But I don't know. Nice interior, really lovely interior. And I think that's perhaps why they've had to go to the new brand, because they're charging 40 grand, 43, I think, for the top model. And you can't charge 43 grand for a Seat. So... Yeah, it's the Toyota Lexus route of just sticking another badge on.
I'd get the wife and kids second-hand Qashqai and spend the remaining 30 grand on a Gura Yaris or something.
Yeah, you're dead right. You could get all the practicality for a quarter or a third of the price, second-hand, and then go and buy something that is actually fun rather than something that just is pretending to sound fun. It was a decent car, but yeah. I think it's just trying too hard to be lots of things.
Well, I haven't been testing cars, obviously. But I have been doing some mechanical work.
Yep. Is this the Victor?
No, this is my daily, the Passat.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been trying to get into the mechanics a bit more, as we've been saying in previous podcasts. And me and my dad have identical cars to a point. So he has a 2007 and I've got a 2010, but they're both the same silver Passat estates. To the untrained eye, are almost identical. But except his was just a total bag of crap. It's about
three
different cars.
Your dad is famous for Banganomics, isn't he?
Yeah, so he's always sort of had good bargain cars that have lasted him well, and he often chuckles and laughs about it. And but you can't sort of it's always been good.
Yeah,
he's always got really good value for it. I mean, he had one that was free that lasted a year or two, one, and then it was 500 quid, 700 quid, whatever. The last one, he had a Passat from 2002, I think that was 800 quid, but that lasted him like 8 years. So then last year the green Passat died and he bought one that was sort of a bit more modern that looked like mine. But well, I say he bought it, someone bought it for him, and it's just been a total disaster. I think he paid 1500 quid for it. Immediately the engine like fell out, so that was a big repair. And then a year down the line, it's dropped to like three cylinders. It's not sounding good. The mechanic was just like, no, it's not worth saving.
Yeah.
I mean, so this car, like, it's been clocked. So if you look at its MOT history, it goes up to like 130,000 and drops 60,000 miles.
I didn't think people did that anymore because it's just so obvious.
Well,
because you just look up the history.
Yeah. Whether or not it could have well been about three different cars. The interesting quirk of it was the first time I drove it. So my Passat is a 6-speed DSG.
Yeah.
So it's the automatic. this is a manual, but it had six on the stick.
Yeah.
So I meant to put it in sixth, and there's just nothing there. It's just okay. There's fourth. There's fifth. No sixth. So it's basically it's got six on the stick, but only five in the box.
So it's got an imposter gear knob on it.
Or an imposter gearbox.
Yeah. Oh, so six does engage, but it doesn't drive it.
No, but there's just nothing there. So right. Yeah, I guess it is the stick. But
right.
Either way, it was always a controversial car. So when it went wrong again, it was just like, right, it's going.
Yeah.
And my dad kind of doesn't have the heart to sell it on in any capacity.
Because he feels he'd be inconveniencing someone else.
Yeah. It's going to the dump.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, this is my opportunity to cannibalize some parts. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And practice my newfound interest in mechanics on a car that's condemned anyway. Which was a good job because I broke a hell of a lot of it. So basically, me and my dad have got a very similar level of mechanical knowledge, which is next to zero. And I went round there, and we both realised that in 30 years, this was our first bit of father-son mechanics.
Mm.
Like, you know, people have got these memories of going out with their dad and as a kid and tinkering with cars. No, that wasn't it for us. This was the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew there was going to be a lot of tea and swearing. So, first of all, I took the rear lights because mine have got a few LEDs that have gone.
Mm-hmm.
And his were perfect, apart from some scratches. So I swapped broken LEDs for scratched.
Mm-hmm.
But again, a lot of plastic clips just kept breaking.
Yeah.
And then the plastic clip had broken, but that was okay because there was a screw. And then I went to screw the screw in and the screw broke. And I was just thinking, oh. So then, you know, we're having to fashion a way of holding it in place. So then we thought, right, we've done the lights. That was easy. Mm-hmm. Let's try and get the alternator out.
Mm-hmm.
Which involved sort of taking the bodywork off and digging into the guts of it, so to speak.
Yeah.
And we actually got the alternator off, but in the process, I think I broke the dipstick. And I broke something else as well. Things just kept breaking. We sort of thought, it's a good job we're not putting this back together again. And then we were going to nick the starter motor, but we were like, oh, sod. Because the starter motor's on like the opposite side to the alternator. So it's like, okay, we've got to take apart that whole other side of the engine now. So, yeah, and then we also nicked the bonnet because my bonnet, the paint had faded badly and his one was full of stone chips. So it was a case of picking between really faded paintwork or stone chips.
Yep.
And I picked stone chips. So it's now got a stone chipped bonnet. But that was incredibly hard to get lined up.
Yeah.
You know, the first time you put it on and closed the bonnet, it didn't close. And then the second time it was too far to the left and then it was too far to the right. So really what we learnt was doing any sort of mechanical work is potentially expensive if you've got to put it back together. Quite frustrating.
So you don't feel you've really
learned a lot from
that?
Not really. It sort of, in a way, knocks your confidence because you think, Christ, if I was swapping the alternators over and this was my car, half of it wouldn't be working anymore. But my car also has a broken rear coil spring. So I think over this weekend, well, I've bought two new coil springs.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the now oil-spattered Haynes manual might be back out again this weekend to change a coil spring. And I hope, well, I can't afford to break anything because this is my car now.
There'll be oil and blood on it by the end of the weekend.
Yeah. I mean, it's due an MOT on Monday. So basically, if I fail, I can just tell my mechanic when he does the MOT to do it. But I was hoping to save the labour costs.
Yeah.
And try and do it. I mean, the Haynes manual makes it also sound so simple. But then the set you look at your car and it's all covered in rust and everything's brittle and corroded. And
and I suppose as well, the experience you've had so far has been with the Victor, and it probably makes that look quite simple compared to the complexity of a modern car.
Well, Not necessarily, but just the way modern cars are built, just using crappy materials. Mm. Even a Volkswagen, I think, would be quite well made. Mm. But so many of the parts are like plastic and clip-on, and the plastic just goes brittle. And you try and remove a bit, and it just all breaks apart. And
yeah, It's like it's built to be put together once, and then once it's aged a bit and weathered, like you said, it becomes brittle, and that's
The Victor, I think we've worked on that, and we've not really broken anything. It's all just quite... It's a bit more robust. So, yeah, we learnt that.
Did it put your dad off? Was he interested in doing any more work on a car of his own?
I don't think he was...
Was he ever interested?
I don't think he's hugely bothered. I think he was just there as a sort of a... You know, as someone else to sort of run it past. You know, like, I'm going to do this. Do you think it's a good idea? Yeah, whatever. I think he's still got... Yeah. I don't know how now he's got a lot less value in this car because I've nicked a few bits.
Well, I suppose in his mind it was gone and it was written off, so he'd probably say yes to whatever you wanted to do to it.
Yeah, but he can't drive it to the dump now, or to the scrapyard now. They've got to come and pick it up.
Yeah. And have you gone to a scrapyard for that, or have you gone to like one of those like We Buy Car websites?
Well, we were leaving it for a bit because he wanted to make sure I was happy with my new bonnet.
Okay.
So,
if I was
not happy with the stone chips, I could go back and swap it for heavily faded paint. Because I was looking at it, it needed a respray. It really did. Mm. So I basically saved a respray.
Yeah, fair enough. And if the chips aren't too bad, it's not going to rust anytime soon.
No. So, yeah, I'm sure it'll be fine.
Good stuff. Well, I feel you've learnt a lot, but you don't really want to do much with that knowledge.
No, it sort of put me off, and you know, at least I got to use all my tools.
Oh, that's
good. Bought all my tools. Yeah, now. I didn't buy just one torque wrench. I bought two torque wrenches. Last week, at quite great expense. So I need to just stop buying tools.
I feel the urge to do the same, just to have some basic stuff. But I've got zero storage for that kind of thing. My car could do with some wheel spacers, because I got the lowering springs fitted by Mazda, and I forgot that when you do that, it knocks the geometry out ever so slightly, and you need to put 15mm spacers on every wheel, which is a really simple part. It's just a metal disc. Take the wheel off, put the spacer on, put the wheel back on. But I thought, even the simplest thing like that, I can't do. I don't have a jack, I don't have a torque wrench. So,
but this is it. But yeah. I thought this the same thing about 3 months ago. And I've now got, you know, I've got the socket set.
Mm.
I've got the jack and axle stands. I've got the torque wrenches.
Well, if I had a garage, I would probably have bought everything and done that by now.
I would be prepared to put aside at least £500 to buy all these bits as well.
Yeah. I'd do the same. If I had the storage, I think I'd probably do the same, because it would come in handy again at some point. And there's just the satisfaction of doing it yourself.
Oh, last Saturday,
yes,
I bought a bicycle as well.
Oh, right.
So I'm now a bicyclist.
You can just say cyclist, but if you'd rather say bicyclist, that's your lifestyle choice.
Well, that specifies I haven't got a tricycle.
That's true.
Or a unicycle. Or a unicycle. Or a quadricycle. So I am a bicyclist.
So what sort of bicycle is it? Like, is it a road bike, a mountain bike, a hybrid?
It's a hybrid, yeah, it's right. A hybrid. I went in the shop and said, I want a hybrid.
Uh-huh.
I went to Halfords. Are we allowed to name brand names? I went to Halfords.
Sure, yeah. They can pay us if they want.
They were useless, to be honest.
Oh, right. Well, maybe they won't pay us.
I basically got the equivalent of computer says no person. I sort of thought, I looked online and there was a few bikes. I thought, okay, yeah. I thought, I'll go to Halfords. They'll have them there. I'll be able to try a few and...
Yeah.
There'll be a salesperson there who'll be able to go,
fond memories of childhood doing that.
Yeah, because I remember doing that
when
I was younger to get a new bike. You went to Halfords, you tried a few, you walked out with one.
Well, so you've grown out the last one, you get the new one, and yeah.
So I went in there and the lady, I said, I'm interested in a men's hybrid bike. I specified one I'd seen online. Mm-hmm. And she tapped it into the computer. She went, no, we haven't got any. I said, okay, well, is there any other stock locally? Can you order me one in? Tap, tap, tap. No. I said, okay, well, I want a men's hybrid. Tell me what you got.
Yeah.
And she goes, oh, I don't know. She found one. She goes, what about this one? It was a bit more money, but I was like, okay, yeah, it looks good. Tap, tap, tap. No, we haven't got any stock. Okay, what about, can you order me one? No, we haven't got any stock. So I was like, I just walked out in the end. I was like, okay, right, thanks very much. Well, basically, there's no bikes in Halfords.
That was a bit of a thing earlier in the pandemic, I think, bicycles were in short supply.
Yeah, I thought we'd be over it by now.
Yeah.
So anyway, I drove to my local bike shop in town, a little bike shop. I walked in, it was a father-son kind of setup.
Yep.
And I said, hello, I'm here for a men's hybrid bike and I want disc brakes and lock-off suspension. And he went, oh, we've got this one here. And he just wheeled it forward.
It's product knowledge, isn't it? That they just didn't have enough.
I went, will that fit me? He went, well, jump on. I jumped on. It was an okay fit. Yeah. He went, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
And he said, do you like it? I said, well, these grips, the handlebar grips felt a bit naff.
Mm.
And he went, yeah, they are shit, them handlebar grips. I'll tell you what, I'll chuck in a better pair for free. Nice. And he went to his shelf and pulled a pair off and stuck them on. So yeah, I literally walked into a shop. 5 minutes later, I'm walking out with the bike I wanted. And yeah, it's a buy local, basically.
Well, I was about to say, yeah, the lesson there
the moral of the story.
Is buy local. Yeah, the product knowledge was there. He's got the margin to be able to offer you a discount.
Yeah, and he said, bring it back in a month's time and I'll service it for you and tighten things up. And
brilliant.
Yeah, he's like, I'm Chris, this is my dad Steve, and we've been selling bikes for 40 years. And I was like, great, thank you. Why did I waste 3 hours in bloody Halford?
So what's your plans for your bicycle?
Well, where I'm working, sort of anywhere between sort of 2 and 5 days a week, is sort of an irritating 11-12 minute drive, sort of around, like doing a U-shape, sort of going away and then coming back on myself.
It's about a 5K, isn't it? Have you run there before? But sort of through
fields. Yeah, so I can run there. It's 5K, but it's sort of half roads and then half fields, but it's almost as the crow flies.
Yeah.
So I can bike to work in 3 or 4 minutes longer than it takes me to drive. Mm. That and just general something to do, I suppose.
Yeah.
Doing some cycling. It's like a social thing, isn't it? People go out for bike rides, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
I'll do a bit of that. Yeah.
Nice. You can go out with all the people you've been mowing the lawns for, asking them if they've got a bicycle, if they want to go out for a ride.
Yeah. I'm getting to know all my neighbours still. It's been a bad week, really, because of the cold snap. No one's wanted any lawns mowed.
Oh, yeah.
But that'll all come back. What else? So since we last spoke, it was... obviously, it's now been March to April, which means we had to deal with April Fool's Day.
Oh, God.
when will people just give up on that? Sort of when social media was kind of new and funny and everyone was like, oh, look, it's like someone did a funny post on Facebook and it's April Fool's. But now sort of 15 years later, it's like everything on April the 1st, like,
I know.
Honestly, I think people need to just give up on that one.
I was glad last year when it was cancelled because we were all too shell-shocked by the pandemic. That was good. But I was a bit annoyed it came back this year.
There's enough bullshit on Facebook, fake news and all that. Why do we need a day where like actual companies start producing the bullshit that we've got annoyed with the rest of the year?
Yeah, well, Volkswagen.
I know
this
people
time
say
around,
it's meant to be
just
the Volkswagen,
the most spectacular own goal.
I mean, just who came up with that?
I don't know. I was quite pleased in a way that the press turned against them, and I know I'm a journalist, so I'm sort of hardwired to hate April Fools. But I was quite pleased, in a way, to see articles being like, oh, Volkswagen lied. Remember last time they lied about emissions?
Yeah, well, I'm paying for that now in my £205 road tax a year. Yeah, thank you, Volkswagen. Right. So...
No, I can't think of any really that stood out from the automotive industry have been any good. Some of them are, sometimes. One company... Mm. I'll say who it is. Alfa Romeo did one where it was the April Fools was filters for their windows of their car. So it's like, oh, you can't go abroad at the moment, but you press a button and the glass tints to give you Tuscan sunset filter or whatever. And they sent that in an email. I was like, oh, I'm not that interested. And then a few hours later, after midday, which we all know is when April Fools has ended, about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they emailed again and said, oh, have you got any interest in this? I replied, I was like, well, no, not. I'm not really covering April Fools this year, sorry. And it's like the end of the day, so no. And I don't know, I think the press office is almost forced to push this on, like to try and make it, you know, to get it in the news. And it's April Fools, it doesn't matter. Like, nobody cares. But anyway, I saw Porsche doing paint to sample rust or paint to sample patina, which was spread around a bit. But that was about
it. This is the problem. There's just too much false stuff going around already. We don't need big corporations putting their own 2p's worth in. Anyway, that's my gripe with April Fools.
No, I don't think
we just
you.
Need to let it go.
Did you watch Extreme E?
I am aware of the concept of Extreme E. I follow some of the drivers on
It's just Instagram. Occurred to me now, we didn't talk about whether we'd talk about this or not, but it's just occurred to me that is a thing that happened. And I watched a bit of it and I can't decide if I liked it or not. I think the format is quite good. You have a male and female driver in each team. Qualifying is a combined effort with a driver change, and it's the total time of each driver doing a lap. But
sounds good to me.
And it was quite good. You know, it's qualifying is sort of like a rally stage in that it's point to point. It's a circuit, but it's I think about 7 minutes a lap, something like that, with a driver change in between. It was in Saudi Arabia this time for the season opener, so it's desert, which is fine. But when it came to the race on the Sunday, the dust is such that the drivers can't follow each other at all. So they all go barreling into the first corner. I think it was three teams at a time. So I'm watching Carlos Sainz Sr., who was fantastic in qualifying, barreling into the first corner with, I think, Sebastian Loeb next to him. I forget if they're in the same race, but you've got some really good drivers out there.
But yeah, those are some names.
They've got some real names. They've got Loeb, Sainz, Button, Sarrazin, I think, and a couple of others that I sort of recognised. But the problem is, as soon as you've won the first corner or the second corner, that's it. Like, you can't follow anyone. And they were falling back to sort of 10-second gaps between each car because the dust was such that any closer and you can't see anything. And the train is pretty extreme. They had some couple of big crashes in qualifying. So you can't be just going in blind.
Yeah, I saw there was some rollovers and stuff.
So I think the format is there. It'd be interesting to see what it's like on a different surface. But I didn't mind it.
Yeah, I should have to sort of pay more attention to the next one, I suppose.
I don't know where the next one is. It's all over the world.
We did have a Grand Prix. Last time we spoke, it was Grand Prix weekend, but it was pre-Grand Prix.
Oh, yeah. We were giving shit advice because we'd not seen much.
Yeah. Well, I think we'll always give shit advice.
Probably.
But it was a good...
It was a bloody good race, wasn't it?
Bloody good Grand Prix, actually. I really thought Verstappen was a dead cert to win it.
Yeah, me too.
And they sort of got outfoxed, perhaps, by Hamilton and Mercedes. But for once, Hamilton won a race, and you thought, actually, well done. Like, that was a tough one. And
yeah. For the last sort of dozen laps or so, or even more than that, I just thought, well, it's inevitable. Verstappen's on the newer tyres. He's going to go past. It just depends when.
And well, he did.
Obviously, he did.
But then he
off
gave
the
it
track.
Back.
Yeah,
it was all,
yeah.
All very dramatic.
And yeah, so full credit to Hamilton for holding on to it. And yeah, it was great. It's just what we want to see.
Looks like we're going to have a good season at the front there, hopefully.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think Perez, if he has a better weekend, might be able to be a second Red Bull in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, looking good. You know, I thought Nikita Mazepin didn't disappoint.
He was reliable, wasn't he? Right.
Yeah, he did 2-3 corners.
Yeah. There was a stat, so I think, he did more parade laps than racing laps, obviously because there were two parade laps, but...
There was so much of that. I think Grosjean was burning in the car longer than Mazepin was in the race and stuff.
Yeah.
I've never known someone coming into it just so disliked, and then for him to just throw it straight away.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone was just like, oh, well done.
Not to his credit, but in his defence, the Haas does look like a bit of a handful. I saw Schumacher having a couple of...
Schumacher spun it as well. But everyone went, oh, no.
Yeah.
Poor Mick Schumacher and his dodgy car.
Yeah.
And then Mazepin, everyone's like, ha! So,
A sport where... There are lots and lots of neutrals watch F1. I'd probably consider myself a neutral watching F1. I haven't seen people dislike a driver this much for quite a long time.
Did you see the picture I put in the group chat of how neutral I am?
Oh, yeah.
I was wearing...
With your three teams' worth of clothing.
I was wearing a McLaren T-shirt and an Aston Martin jacket and a Red Bull hat. And I've since bought... I bought this before the first race and it turned up last week. I bought the Alonso Alpine hat. So I've now got an Alpine hat.
You're supporting a third of the grid.
Yeah, basically I just wear whatever... I've got a Mercedes hat, I've got a Red Bull hat, got a Renault hat, I've got a couple of Force India tops. I mean, I can just switch it up. But I guess I just like Formula One, I suppose, rather than any specific team. But I do like Alonso, so that's why I bought the hat. And then I was a bit disappointed with Alpine's performance. Apparently they're kind of saving themselves for next year or something. So...
But it's good that it's back. It was a shame it was one race and then a 3-week gap. But I suppose that means, what, there's one next weekend?
Yeah, next weekend is Imola.
Yeah.
Which I was a bit disappointed with last year because it's quite difficult to overtake round there, wasn't it?
Yeah. So there was the buzz of an old track coming back, but then we realised that the layout doesn't really lend itself to the newer cars. But no, we'll see. If it's anything like the last race, then I can't wait.
Yeah, it's good. Good stuff. So what else? I mean, topically, we're recording on Friday night. And the whole news is... Well, the whole of TV and news and radio has sort of gone into mourning mode for Prince Philip.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing to watch, nothing to listen to. That's, you know, it's an expected story, but sad all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, he was a good servant to the country and he did his time in the military, so was certainly a good person. And the Duke of Edinburgh Award as well is a big legacy.
Yeah, I'm sure we've all got D of E stories.
I think the people of Sandringham, the motorists of Sandringham, can rest a little easier now. There won't be any
Land Rover Freelanders making dubious junction exits. He seemed to be quite into his cars, didn't he? I don't know if you've seen many of the photos going around Instagram and Twitter today.
I think you've hurried together a piece, haven't you, tonight?
Stuck something up on Instagram, just on my story, just a few images of various cars that he's been in.
I saw a picture of him with a Series 1 Range Rover.
Yes, yeah.
Which looked... cool.
Yeah.
And I've just finished watching the first series of The Crown, and he's always darting around in a little MG. I don't know how true that is.
I'm not sure. I'm looking at some images now. There's one where he looks to be in a paddock of some kind. I couldn't tell you if it's like Goodwood or somewhere, but it looks to be that kind of environment. And it looks like an Aston DBR1. It's perhaps a bit small. Their Le Mans winning car from the 50s. There's a photo of him in an XKSS Jag, which is pretty cool, famously owned by Steve McQueen. A photo of him, I don't know if he's folding himself in or out. He's a tall chap, wasn't he? Folding himself into an original Fiat 500, which looks quite funny. And a Land Rover with Her Majesty. And he's sat on the roof with his binoculars. And there are quite a few photos, I think, of them both in Land Rovers or Range Rovers. And there's the story that I saw retold by John Sopel, I think it was, the BBC journalist in Washington, about how when the Obamas visited the UK, and obviously the Secret Service are with them, and Prince Philip insisted that he drove Barack and Michelle up the driveway at, I'm not sure where they were visiting, Sandringham or somewhere.
Yeah, I've seen that. I saw that picture earlier with Obama in the front.
Yeah. So John Sopel was saying, in fact, the Secret Service were absolutely just having kittens about it. They were shitting themselves.
90-year-old man.
Yeah. It's like, no, I'll drive. But fair play to him. Seems to enjoy his cars.
Yeah, fair play. Crack on. I mean, he didn't give up his driving license till he was 97 after that.
I did, by putting a Freelander on his roof. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, 97 is pretty good to be driving. So
Yeah.
Fair play. But everything's gone a bit. You know, I finished work, in quotes, today, and I had to do about an hour's driving. And I listened to a podcast, and when it finished, well, my car's kind of got like a rudimentary Bluetooth system, so it was just blank. So I thought, well, I'll stick the radio on. And, you know, every channel was just playing sad music. Which, you know, I kind of thought, because for years I've obviously worked as a shift worker. Mm-hmm. And at the moment I tend to be doing a more Monday to Friday style gig. So I thought, oh, you know, a bit of Friday night, you know, it's Friday, get pumped up, radio.
Kitchen disco type stuff.
Yeah. And then I turned it on and it was all just misery.
Somber.
I was like, oh.
Well, there's real protocol to this stuff. There are, as far as I'm aware, there are two playlists, and they're labelled very clearly on the BBC's system for DJs to play in, you know, in this kind of situation. And it is just somber stuff.
This is where journalism kind of gets interesting for me, because what I've seen on the news tonight and the radio is a whole load of pre-made stuff that someone's just hit go, and it's all just spewing out. So for you guys, this, I mean, you're behind, if you're only tonight doing a bit about Prince Philip and his cars, you're a bit behind, mate, because I think everyone, all the other journalists have already done that.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely
They're
right.
They're just hit and play.
This is one of the easiest days for journalists. You know, tomorrow's papers will have been done years ago. Yeah, they'll just need a quick update. I remember when I worked in a general newsroom a few years ago, we had loads of stories in the system ready to go. And the headline would be, you know, it would say, hold, do not publish, you know, Queen dies age, whatever, Philip dies age, whatever, hold. And you just jump in the system and publish, update the obituary quickly and publish it. And the printed stuff, I think I'm right in saying, if the Queen were to die, you know, sort of when the Queen does indeed pass away, the Times, I think, has got 11 days of coverage already to go for the paper.
But it seems very false to me. It all just seems
I suppose it's better than just rummaging through Wikipedia at short notice.
Yeah, I know, but it just all seems like we, you know, we're still alive and we were making all this stuff, just waiting for him to die, you know, sort of thing. But
I mean, all the papers have got an obituary department. Something I was reminded of today is the RATS system that all the radio stations have, all the way down to like hospital radio. I forget what it actually stands for.
But is this the lights?
Those are they have the obit lights that shine blue to tell a DJ that something very serious has happened and that you've to tone the music right down and then go to the news as soon as you can. So that would have happened today. But also the RATS system is the acronym. I can't remember what it actually stands for, but the sort of the jokey in the know acronym is it's Royal About to Snuff It. And it's a noise that is played through Broadcasting House. If that's played, then shit's got real, and you need to do what you've been trained to do.
I was a bit gutted today because I missed out on the breaking news. You know that you get that shiver up your up your spine. So we were listening. I was working today, and I quite enjoy Ken Bruce on Radio 2, which is like a sign of age.
Popmaster. Yeah.
So I turned on Radio 2 at 10:28, ready for Popmaster. Listened to Popmaster, and then it wasn't actually Ken Bruce today. It was Gary Davies. Not that that matters, but it was a good show. I was kind of, you know, the music was fitting in with our work, and I was working with another chap, and we were singing along. So I kept it on, and Jet 2 were leading the news stories, which was interesting. And then at 12 o'clock, Vanessa Feltz comes on. And I can't stand Feltz,
so I turned it off. And then at 1 minute past...
I turned it off. and I went from like my lunch break at 1 o'clock, and I walked in and I said, oh, you know, my company were top news story on the news earlier. You know, they're drumming up, you know, a bit of it, you know, they're sort of putting it to the government about the travel situation. And they were like, well, what, not Prince Philip? And I was like, what do you mean Prince Philip? Well, I knew he died, because as soon as someone says, what, not Prince Philip, you know.
Why else is he in the news?
But yeah, I missed the whole music coming off. And I mean, it would have been Vanessa Feltz. So
they just faded everyone out on the radio and played the national anthem. And there's a clip of...
Really? What, no?
Yeah. No intro. There's a clip of someone with Radio 1. They must have rewound it and then filmed it. And it is like... whatever song it was, I don't know what, you know, something upbeat. And they're like, oh, just wait for the beat to drop. And it just fades off and then the national anthem comes on.
I wish I'd... in a way, I wish I'd have kept it on and listened, because it'd be one of the moments where we would have just dropped all of our tools and been like, what the f...
And on the TV, it was quite something as well, because you've seen BBC News butt into BBC 1 and 2 every so often. But for this one, it was TV faded to black, and then a black and white breaking news image came across the screen. And then it went to the announcement. And you'll notice that the newsreaders have all put black on by then. They've all changed into their black clothing, which they have on standby for these things. Yeah. So, it was all played out to protocol. Yeah.
But you get that moment where you look at the person in the room and you think, shit, is this like nuclear war?
Yeah. It's a real moment to be like, you remember where you were.
Oh, well, I will, because I was painting some wood and I was listening to like Duran Duran on the 80s playlist.
Oh, well.
Oh, dear. Oh, well.
Yeah. So I think just lastly this week, I was going to talk quickly about an interview I had with Matte Rimac of Rimac Cars, Rimac Automobili, I believe they're called, the electric car company from Croatia. And had you known much about Rimac before I mentioned this yesterday?
Yes. What I knew about him was he was the chap that made his own electric car, and that's how he started.
Yeah, so he raced, as a teenager, he raced an old BMW 3 Series, and I think he blew the engine up or something and thought, oh, I'll just make it EV instead, and got really good at doing that and thought there's a business in this, and off he went.
And he's sort of a similar age bracket to us.
Yeah, he's 33.
As well, you know. He's not some sort of billionaire that's doing something else and ended up in cars. He's just a chap who started engineering his own cars, and it's kind of spiraled, I guess, for him. I'm a bit disappointed because I see his name as Mate.
Yeah.
Mate Rimac.
Yeah, and Mate.
Which is handy for me because, like, if I forget anyone's name, I automatically default to Mate. But that would be difficult with him now, because if I went, all right, mate, he'd think, no, it's Mate.
Yeah, exactly.
I just call everyone mate.
I think it's Rimac.
That's just how I roll.
As well, so it's not how it looks.
Yeah, of course it is. So Croatian chap who started off making his own cars, but now it's been a few years, but it's gathering pace, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I think if people haven't heard of Rimac, they might have heard of the Rimac car. Their first car is the one that Richard Hammond drove off an Alp in, I think, the second series of the Grand Tour. He was doing a hill climb there and binned it off an Alp, and hurt himself quite badly, and the car burst into flames, which wasn't a good look for EVs by all means. But yeah, that was a Rimac, and that was the first car. They've been busy building their second for a while. It was going to be shown off in production form at Geneva, I think, last year. Got delayed with the pandemic. Now, I think that's due soon. And they'll be making a few of them, and it's going to be, 2,000 horsepower electric hypercar, £2 million. But the interest here is that how popular Rimac is at selling components into or to other car makers. So Porsche is a big investor.
Porsche, Volkswagen.
Yeah, Hyundai and Kia are big investors. Aston Martin, Koenigsegg are customers. Whatever he's doing, whatever that company is doing, all the other manufacturers are super keen. Even Porsche, who's seems to be quite happy doing their own thing with Taycan, they see real value in Rimac, and the company sees real value in itself. So we're recording on Friday, but on Monday, so I'll probably have to delay publishing this slightly, but on Monday they'll be announcing their new campus that they're building, which is a massive 200,000 square meter campus for 2,500 employees. In Croatia. And I don't know if you saw the images I sent over to you. It looks pretty cool. It looks kind of Silicon Valley meets McLaren, kind of futuristic glass building surrounded by fields and lakes and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, it's some serious investment.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a big deal. They said they've been really quiet about it for a while and decided now to make a big bit of noise. And
It's quite nice that we've got sort of a new country on the car map, so to speak. I mean, I'm kind of a big map kind of freak, I suppose. But, you've kind of got, companies from Italy and Spain and France and Britain and Germany, Austria, whatever else. And now we've got a Croatian one.
Mm.
Yeah. Skoda, Czech Republic, there's...
Yeah.
It's kind of nice to see another country getting involved on the car manufacturing map.
Yeah, definitely. And he was saying that, you know, that's not without its difficulties because the country itself just doesn't do automotive. You know, there aren't parts suppliers just around the corner. You know, if you're making a niche sports car manufacturer in Oxford, then you're pretty good because it's Motorsport Valley. You've got all the F1 teams on your doorstep. But to do
it... Yeah, they've got Euro car parts.
Yeah. to do it in Croatia and to the spec that they're doing, yeah, you haven't got that on your doorstep. So a lot of the stuff they're just doing themselves. And yeah, so the batteries, the motors and the software, they're doing themselves. And everyone, you know, sees a lot of value in that. He doesn't want to sell out. That was asked, but he'd said, no, we're building a company for 100 years. You know, we want to be a Porsche. We want to be a Ferrari. I am not a financial advisor, but he did say they're going public soon-ish. So that's probably worth looking at. Because I think they're a European Tesla, perhaps, but without building their own cars at scale. They're building the components and then selling them to everyone else. I liked how I asked him about the campus and I said, it's a bit McLaren-esque. And he said, yeah, we had actually Norman Foster, the architects, were interested. They entered the competition to build it. They weren't chosen in the end, but they did McLaren, the McLaren Technology Center. And he said, we wanted it to be like McLaren, but the opposite of what Ron Dennis stands for, which I thought was quite funny.
I think Norman Foster did Stansted Airport as well.
Oh, did he? No, did Wembley Stadium, yeah. All sorts of stuff.
All the big gigs. But not that one, obviously.
No, not that one. And I think it was a Croatian architect that won the bid for it. But they've got loads going on there. It's all sort of quite... it's sort of on the edge of the countryside in a way. It's all quite, you know, landscaped. They've got their own sheep. They're doing their own organic food that's produced there. There'll be a museum. It's open to school kids to come and go on tours and stuff. And it seems to be much more open than perhaps other car manufacturers are. And, I mean, good for them. And I asked him a little bit as well about the future of electric cars generally and specifically lightweight sports cars and how they can be electric because batteries are so heavy. And he said it'd be really difficult. He basically said that's the most difficult thing to do. So I asked this question sort of hoping that he'd say, yeah, an electric MX-5 or an electric Alpine is possible. It doesn't seem that way. He said it's certainly the hardest. He said it will happen. And he said that there are some projects that he knows of and that they're getting involved with, but it's super niche and it's just not the business model for them. So it does make me wonder what a electric car or electric sports car will look like in 10 years' time.
Yeah, well, you see how much the technology's come on in our lifetime. So anything's possible.
Yeah.
This might take some time.
Yeah. Live in hope.
There'll still be some petrol to burn for a while, hopefully.
Yes, I need to ask him a follow-up actually on synthetic fuel that Porsche has been banging on about and investing quite heavily in, because that's a real hot topic at the moment. So if we can get sort of carbon neutral synthetic fuel, then that sort of undoes the need for batteries to some extent. Yeah, well, I think that's everything that I've got for this week.
Yes, we'll be back in 2 weeks on the...
Is that the week between two Grand Prix? Are they 2 weeks apart next?
Yeah.
Okay.
It is, yeah.
Probably just wanted to say a quick thank you actually to everyone who has listened to the other podcast that we, and especially you've been working on in the last few weeks, the Cox Tales stuff that we've done, which is interviewing various members of our university karting society. And yeah, thank you to everyone who's downloaded that and told us that they've enjoyed it. I've been listening to my housemate laughing to it this evening from upstairs, so I think it's gone down quite well.
Yeah, I've been pleased, and we've opened up a Just Giving page for it because, it's very much tailored towards people that would know us or have been in the karting society at Kingston University, which is how we met. It's been an amazing response so far, so thank you to everyone that's listened to that. We've opened up a Just Giving page, which has already made some money, which has been nice. It kind of makes it all worthwhile, going to the effort of recording it and editing it and everything else. So, yeah. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, it's been good. And thank you all for listening and downloading this podcast as well. And we will be back again in a couple of weeks, so we're looking forward to speaking to you then.
Yes, I enjoy doing it. And I hope everyone enjoys listening to it.